This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We are in the Power Edge feature, the first of the year 2020. How exciting. And we're joined today by editor, poet, writer, columnist. Is there anything that you haven't done? The list is quite...
I don't think I can say it on radio.
Yeah.
But okay. I usually have a standard answer for what I haven't done. And yeah, there's certain programming that I've never done.
Okay.
In my life.
But, all right.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of everything.
All right, we'll leave it there. That voice, by the way, that you're hearing is the voice of Frank Kodjo Bafo. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Bafo.
Well,
and he's our guest today. And I mentioned earlier when I was throwing forward to this conversation that if you have ever been interested in kind of growing your content and your product in the digital world, and perhaps you're, you know, an aspiring, you know, influencer or interested in growing your personal brand, then for sure this conversation is for you. If you're an entrepreneur, for instance, a content creator, in today's world, I'm sure you've caught on to the fact that everything is digitizing and transitioning into the digital space. And so now more than ever, it's become quite critical that you align yourself with the changing environment, with the changing world. And Frank, do you prefer to be called Kodjo?
Lately, people know that my first name is Frank. I'm sure there are a couple of people going, who, Frank? Who's that?
Okay, I'll call you Kodjo. He's no stranger to the media environment, and he's going to be talking to us about that. I'm really excited to have him in our studios today, alongside a chief innovation analyst, Pritesha Siraj. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yes.
It's been a while. Hey.
Excellent, excellent. I think... for me, for starters, you know, when we talk about the evolution of media, Kodjo, what are we referring to exactly? You know, what is the evolution of media? How would you describe it to our listeners?
Well, I think there's two parts of the media. And when we talk about the evolution, we're talking about, let's call it the distribution platforms, mm-hmm. right? So traditionally you had, you know, you have radio, you have magazine, you have newspaper. And for a long time, those were the heroes of each business. So, for example, you know, this business on air, the radio station, that's kind of the hero and the central part of the business. I've worked for a magazine. When you're in magazine, that's the core of the business. That's what generates the most revenue. But with the evolution from a technical perspective of the platforms, the means of distribution. So if you look at social media, if you look at digital, you look at websites, you look at video, you look at audio. As that has changed, the media businesses stopped making the bulk, well, their revenues within what was their hero or their core business started to drop. And I think we're still in a period of flux where... yes, you have revenues dropping in magazines and everybody's saying, okay, you must go digital. But from a business perspective, you'll find that digital doesn't necessarily make up for what you're losing. So the business model behind media has had to change.
Mm.
So when we talk about the evolution of media, it's about the business model around it and the distribution channels.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a bit old school in that I really believe it's the content. You know, it's about the content and it's about what we're saying with the content and the messages or the stories that we're delivering. And all of these things are merely just distribution channels or mechanisms to distribute content that have an impact on how you mold and structure that content. But at the end of the day, my starting point is always, what am I looking to communicate?
Do you think we're getting it wrong if we do start focusing just on the distribution channels and kind of let the content and what we're getting out there and the storytelling kind of fall to the backside and just focus on ensuring that while we look good on social media, we look good online, but kind of, you know, sacrifice content and those heart stories and the storytelling that you were referring
to?
I've
become that old guy who kind of looks at stuff and goes, yeah, you kids don't know what you're doing. I think there's, you know, we went through this process where, you know, stories became shorter and shorter. And if you think about clickbait and headlines and all of that sort of stuff, where it became, how do you capture attention? Not how you retain attention, but literally how do you capture attention?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at digitally, literally what they're looking for is your clicks.
Mm.
So your clicks and your presence there, even if it's for 2 seconds, will make certain platforms their money. I think now we've shifted to a point where it is about that balance. You know, with certain types of stories and certain types of news, you don't want anything that's long-winded. But I also believe there's a space for kind of good quality, you know, good quality content. And I was listening to something recently where somebody was talking about newspapers. And I've always believed that newspapers stopped being breaking news spaces 8-9 years ago. So to continue to try and break news in a newspaper just really defeats the purpose, because we're getting that stuff on Twitter, on Facebook, or everywhere else. So I personally believe that newspapers should be able to unpack an issue and you know, take a step back and go, okay, we're not going to talk about this today. It happened today. We're not going to talk about today. We're going to talk about it in 3 days' time. And then by the time we're talking about it, we have covered all angles to it. So I'm getting a broader analysis that gives me all sides of a, you know, all sides of a situation or a news story that allows me to then make my decisions accordingly with that information.
Sure.
So, you know, it is, you do have to take platform into consideration, because how you're going to communicate in a tweet is going to be very different from how you communicate in a magazine article. Is going to be very different from how we communicate on air with a certain amount of time, a Facebook post, because you have different spaces. So you have to take those into consideration, and you have to be able to craft your story, your message, in a way that maximizes the use of that platform. But I am a big believer that there has to be a story. There has to be some substance to it for it to be justified in going out across all the different platforms.
Do you think that the state of flux that the media is perhaps in right now is also just opening up that space to a lot of criticism as well from their consumers, who are understanding that, you know, the media is evolving and changing, but is starting to see kind of the cracks that aren't being papered, the cracks that aren't being taken care of? I mean, for instance, this Enoch Mpianzi story, there was a lot of criticism with the headline choice that was utilized for social media by Times Live Media to say that, well, the parents couldn't afford the life jacket, and that's why, you know, and things like that. And it is clickbait, because obviously we're all going to kind of gravitate towards that particular headline. But at the same time, it's, you know, it feels disingenuous to the consumer, to the reader, and it doesn't feel like proper journalistic kind of ethical work.
Well, I mean, that's another kettle of fish. And so one of the things I've believed is, so media is biased. So if you look at the U.S., like if you look at Fox News, you know what you're going to get. And it's biased, and it's evidently biased. I personally believe, and this may rub some people up the wrong way, but I have always personally believed that media in this country specifically is biased, and because of its history, etc. And you see that in the stories that are covered, how they're covered, the stories that are not covered. Because a lot of times, you know, if somebody says, look left, I always want to see what's happening right, because I want to know what they're distracting me from. And you see that in the media quite a bit. And so, yes, I agree with you. I mean, I think some of the headlines are extremely irresponsible, right? Also, how pictures are used. I haven't really worked in news, like in hardcore news. And that's intentionally. I prefer to work in media where I'm looking at a lot more positivity and a lot more optimism. It fulfills me
personal
as a person,
choice.
Right?
Yeah.
Even when I blog, I write about, if I don't have anything good to say about something, I'd rather just not say anything about it. And I have that, you know, that's my prerogative, and I have the liberty of being able to make those choices. But I was fascinated in having a conversation with a friend years ago who worked with images in newspapers. And the image does a lot in terms of the impression that it gives of a particular story. So if a particular person is profiled and they're scowling, before you even read the story, the headline and the picture is already going to give you a particular perspective on that person. And you see it in this country all the time. I mean, whether it's online, whether it's offline, I'm like, you know, there's certain platforms, and I won't say names, but there's certain platforms where I'm like, it's interesting the people that they have as regular columnists and regular contributors. And that already says a lot about how they position themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though it's not obvious.
And it's also, if you look at the way they cover different stories as well, like you look at different platforms and I read, it's exactly the same story, and the approach and the way they flesh it out is two totally
completely different
experiences for me. Or you may have a case where a certain publication choose a certain angle and continuously hammer that angle and go at it, yet you don't see that angle covered anywhere else in any other media. And you go, why is it that they're choosing to only cover this story or create the story when no one else is saying anything about this? Is there some sort of hidden agenda behind the scenes as well?
And yet we still talk about what's at the fourth estate or unbiased but what we're talking about, you see it. Like if you just take a second, you take a step back, mm-hmm. you can see the biases across media.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Okay, I want to shift the needle a little bit and start talking about growing one's personal brand and just making reference to what you're talking about earlier about, you know, storytelling, the art of storytelling, and how you believe in a more content-driven approach as opposed to just, you know, the clickbaiting that you were talking about. Do the same concepts translate to, you know, on an individual basis if you are trying to grow a personal brand? How important is it that you are telling your story and in essence sharing yourself with the world?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because one, I'm not a big fan of this human being as brand thing. Just like I'm not a big fan of this idea of influence or influencers.
Even though
I work in that space.
What's wrong with the influencers?
So it's purely because how I take it is, you know, I'm a professional. I'm a human being. So my pinned tweet is human being human.
Mm-hmm.
And as a human being, I need to make decisions around my work life and my professional life, my personal life, etc. Having worked in the media and been interested in, for example, Twitter and different platforms, and I always sign up. And with some of the work I've done, gradually I have a bit of a public profile, right? But my approach to that is usually tied to what I'm comfortable with, what I'm interested in.
Mm.
So authenticity has become a word that's bandied around. And I think at the heart of it is if you're looking to build, let's call it a reputation or a brand or whatever you want to call it, in a particular space, it's how true to yourself are you being when you're sharing and when you're collaborating, right? Mm. So I do collaborations with brands, but I only do it if I buy into it.
Mm.
And unfortunately, I'm wired that way. Sometimes I wish I wasn't, because I'd have probably made much more money than I have in my life. But it's about understanding yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, that's the starting point. Because mm-hmm. if you understand yourself, then you don't have to think too hard about mm-hmm. what you're saying. Let's call it the messaging that you're putting out and the story that you're putting out.
Mm.
And you see it, I think you see it more and more, particularly with social media. And, you know, there are a couple of people who, for example, there's Les the Chef or Dr. Cindy Fansale, who they're themselves. And when they talk about certain things, you see there's, it's not packaged. So it's packaged in terms of, you need to understand that if you're going to put on a social media, a picture needs to look a particular way, and you need to take some...
Maybe a hashtag.
And you need to take some time. But they're not talking about, you know, Lesego doesn't talk about stuff that he doesn't know about.
Yeah.
And he's not interested in.
Yeah.
And he's a chef, but then he'll be tweeting about football or rugby or cricket. And it doesn't feel like he's doing it for the brand. It's what he does,
sure,
and it's who he is.
I mean, I raised the very same thing, I think, in a conversation that we had last year with Aldrin St. Pierre on Power Talk and his Thought Council, where some of the presenters were invited. And I raised the issue of what I interpreted as the authentic self versus the networked self, the self that exists on some of these social media platforms and networks. And I often felt that there was something disingenuous happening. There was something in the transition between tweeting or Facebook posting or Instagram posting or captioning as the authentic self and what you have presented as your networked self. And it felt as though a lot of the time people were buying into the commodification of that as opposed to just being truly, like authentically themselves.
And, it's also,
and there was the fear of whether or not that would be accepted because of the likes and the all
of that. So it's also being able to recognize what... So, I mean, I used to tweet a lot when Twitter first started. I mean, I joined up in, what, 2000 and I think end of 2008. And people used to say, what's like having your whole life on Twitter? And I'm like, that's like 5% of my life. Because I'm very deliberate about what I share.
Do you have your whole life on social media, Pritesh?
No, look, I work in the space and I speak to a lot of companies and we consult and we share things. And weirdly enough, I have to tell you, because I'm so involved in the space and I know the impact of the content that's put out there, I'm actually not very active on social media.
He hasn't posted since on Twitter since last year, because this morning I was like, let me see what Pritesh is up to. And I was like, there's nothing going
since
on here.
Since last year.
And it's the same for you on Instagram. It's the same on Facebook. And it's purely this, is that I used to do quite a bit. And then I looked at it and went, I'm actually the product. And I kind of don't enjoy being a product for a big social media company, because what they're doing is they're relying on you to continuously post information, build a community so that they can leverage that community to actually go out there and grow their revenue. And it's fine if that's what you choose to get into. If you say, like, this is what I'm signing up for and I'm also going to grow some revenue out of this and this is how it's going to work. We're all going to get a bit of this pie. It's fine. But I think for me, I went and looked and went, no, I think I'm comfortable hiding behind the scenes and understanding the space, but not necessarily participating it full on.
Not being so a player in the game.
Yeah, you'll tend to feel. I do a lot of talks and a lot of stuff on social media, but and people go, but you're not on it. And I'll be like, but I'm actually on it. I'm on every platform every single day, including TikTok, which I love. But you just won't see me personally participating in it.
So, I mean, when you let's call it front-facing, it's also about the ecosystem that you create. Mm. So, like Pritesh was saying, I mean, you know, it's long been understood that we are the product. So, you're not a Facebook client. You're Facebook's product. Mm. The clients are the companies that pay them money for our information, for our data, right? So, it's the ecosystem that you create. Mm. So, I have, for example, I have my own site, which I pay for. So, that's my own space.
Mm-hmm.
And all these platforms plug into that central place. So my home base is my site. And everything else is literally just an extension of that. It's like a country. So we have ports of entry at the sea.
Yeah.
We have ports of entry at the airports. And then you have ports of entry in the ground. So the different social media platform are the different border gates.
Right.
So you may come across my work and my content at one of those border gates. But it's using that hopefully to then enter the country, which is my site and my platform. And you go to my site, you'll see what I do for a living, because social media influencing or brand collaborations for me are a bonus. That's not what I do for a living.
Mm.
And so if I'm able to do some stuff with brands that I buy into or I use, great. That's a bonus.
What are some of the dangers for those people who are more interested in kind of utilizing social media platforms as their home bases? So your social media influencers, for instance, which it seems, you know, you turn the corner and everybody wants to be an influencer and it's kind of trying to build up that brand. What are the dangers around that, especially when we start talking about longevity? And because I see it with some influencers, you know, you're popular now, you're the hottest thing now, but there's no guarantee that it will be the same 5 years from now, only because just consumer-wise, our tastes are consistently evolving and changing. And so you can't always keep up with those times. So what are the dangers in terms of utilizing social brand media's platforms in that way?
I think you said it. Like, I think you described it perfectly. Like, literally sustainability.
Mm.
So it's... And for me, the biggest challenge is when you make that, you know, when you make that kind of... your influencer work, the core of who you are, because it's also based on numbers. Like, we've created a society that's based on numbers. So, you know, a legendary music album or a classic music album, now it's about how many units it sold. Like, we never had that kind of conversation. You know, the greatest football player, it wasn't on stats.
Yeah.
Yes, there were stats, but there was also an emotional, subjective element to it, right?
A connection.
But we've now created a world where your value... where your perceived values are numbers.
Mm.
And if you are, you know, if you are young and you're coming into that space and you start buying to this idea that the only thing you have of value is if you have this many followers or you get this many likes, when you lose that, I mean, as a human being, the impact that can have on a person's psyche is immense. Mm. And so the biggest danger is that. The biggest danger is that if that's your core, when it goes away, when the next person, the next hottest person comes in, or the next hottest platform. Because like now TikTok, like you talk about TikTok, like my 12-year-old was, for the first time, my 12-year-old was explaining something to me from a tech perspective. Because I've always been the one in the house who does it. And he has people that he follows on TikTok and is excited about TikTok. And another thing is that, interesting thing about Generation Z, which is that next generation, right? So my son is 12 and I discovered he's like on the, at the end of Generation Z. Their social media platforms, he has had an Instagram account. I mean, we had a long talk about him having one, but he's had one for about a year. They delete their posts.
Mm.
They delete their pictures.
Mm.
So it's a lot more fluid. Now imagine if you're a person now where you're building everything around, you know, that. And this generation that's coming up, like they put up captions, they put up pictures, and they delete the pictures. I've got a 16-year-old niece. She has maybe 10 posts. She's posted probably over 1,000 pictures. So the biggest risk is that it's sustainability. If you want to build, if you want to build a career, you want to build a business, or you want to build a profession out of something, you need to look at things like sustainability. And it's been the same thing for time immemorial.
Right.
What are the opportunities now? What are the opportunities looking like in the future? And how is it going to evolve? And how do you ensure that you can evolve with it?
Yeah, yeah.
The platforms we're working with, we don't own them. They're fickle. And we don't know what they look like.
Yeah. Just to read Gilawakile's tweet, she says, I have to agree with your guests. Authenticity is key when building your brand, and one has to be truly authentic to self. At the end of the day, your value is your core and what one will be remembered for in the long run. I think just in closing and wrapping up our conversation, I can't believe we ran out of time. I was so just deeply engrossed. Do you think that's where kind of the future of media is going, that kind of that tug of war between, you know, what is authentic and what is not, just because of how everything is so digitized and, you know, with the evolution of media, is that where things are going? And as a consumer, we're going to have to start getting extra lenses to kind of decipher and tell for ourselves what's real and what's not. And that's kind of where we're heading right now.
I think
now.
The other way, was the odd approach of the other way around. I do think that we need those extra lenses.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think we've always needed those extra lenses. So we're not talking about anything that's fundamentally different for us as human beings in society and community in this world with the challenges that we have in the world. In terms of where we're going and what the platforms look like, I used to do a talk on kind of making sense of content in the digital world. And I'll talk for 45 minutes. And at the end of 45 minutes, if anybody tells you they know where we're going and what it looks like in a year from now, they're lying because we're all still trying to figure it out.
Right.
And it's not just us here.
Yeah.
It's a global discussion that, you know, people are trying things and people are, you know, you go that way and it doesn't work and you try that and you pull from that. So I honestly don't know where we're going. I do believe that as human beings and just from a simple human perspective, I do think that we always end up defaulting back to that, you know, to some of the fundamental values that guide different societies. Just like I think that's why we're having a shift towards more substantial content. And you're starting to see a lot more long-form content even online. And there's a place for everything.
Sure.
So there's a place for print magazines, there's a place for radio,
sure.
There's a place for digital. And it's just how those are balanced out.
Mm. Exciting times. Thank you so much to our two guests, Kojo Bafo, as well as Pritesh Saraj, joining us there to have that very interesting conversation around the heart of storytelling, the evolution of media, all of that.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.